that's not. Are we? Oh, we're live. Oh, good. Okay. Good evening, everyone. We're going to do some public comment. Our fourth commissioner is almost here, but we can do something to get started. I do have some cards with regards to public comment. Once Commissioner Webby is here, we will take roll and formally start the business of the commission. Valerie? Who are you?
I'm Valerie.
Oh, you're Valerie. Okay, well, that's who I just called.
Yes.
Okay. This is for general public comment. Why don't you come on up and talk to us?
I'm Valerie Harrigan. I'm former president and currently secretary of the Arroyo Seco Neighborhood Council and a resident of Mount Washington and a stakeholder there. I'm here today because we are very concerned about subdivision and the way that it has worked, particularly in the case of the Herman subdivision from the Arroyo Seco Neighborhood Council. I understand that that BONC will be taking it up at another meeting, and I will try to be at that meeting as well. Tonight, though, I'd like to focus my comments on the issue of the changes in boundaries that are going to be considered for the piece that's separating off Herman. When we saw their bylaws and we voted on the subdivision, the boundaries appeared to be the same as the boundaries had been. After the vote was completed, we discovered that there had been revisions to those boundaries that included land that had previously been considered to be a part of Monterey Hills, another part of our same neighborhood council. We feel that should be a deep concern to this group. There was definitely a lack of transparency in that when we voted, we were not aware of those changes to the boundaries. They're still very difficult to find. In terms of how the paperwork, how the bylaws, how all of the information was presented. So when people voted on whether to approve this subdivision in terms of the stakeholders themselves, when we all voted, it was not known that there would be a change to the boundaries. We did oppose the subdivision as a general rule, our board did, but I mean, if that's, I think, at this point, sort of spilled milk, where we accept that Herman has chosen to have its own neighborhood council. But I would liken it almost to a nasty divorce, in that you can leave, but my stuff, you can't take my stuff. And we feel that way about this vacant land. This is our, this has been a part of Monterey Hills for a long time. Some of it even includes some housing that has been a part of Monterey Hills for a very long time. And those stakeholders that are in that area that's disputed were never notified. There was no information given to stakeholders prior to the vote or at the vote that the boundary changes were going to be there. Those boundaries between the communities that make up the Arroyo Seco have been the same boundaries, to my knowledge, never disputed in the 15 years or so that neighborhood council has existed. And we find this to be just offensive to the ideas of transparency and democracy and all of the things that neighborhood councils are supposed to be about. And there doesn't seem to have been any opportunity to contest those. The idea that they can get changed after the vote is just, I mean, it's hard to figure out even what to say about it without sounding crazy, because it's just so offensive. Thank you.
Thank you. Linda Valencia. Linda?
Hi. I've been here before, and a lot of what I have to say is very similar to Valerie's, except I gave you each a package tonight of some of the information that I put together. I recently had to renew my ethics training, and then right after that I started working on this project. And I did think that maybe there was something amiss, because The ethics training talks so much about transparency and erring on the side of caution, and I didn't think that happened here. But in the handout I gave you, what we did was we put next to each other the bylaws of Herman and Arroyo Seco. And we looked at the boundaries to see the difference, because there was a great deal of conversation about it. And they actually came virtually the same. And so in the packet that I was preparing for you, my argument was going to be that they're the same. But yesterday on the website for the subdivision, I found another document, which in your package is 3 from the back. And it's a new Article 3. And the interesting thing is it's dated revised 2017. It's the only document in the Herman package that doesn't have an actual date, just a year. And this one changes the boundaries to mirror the new map that we got in February, this map that's in your packet. And we never knew about it. So we got notified in January that this happened, and we got a whole package of information with the bylaws. No one told us that we're supposed to check the website daily to see what new stuff is added to it. And so I understand they get their own neighborhood council, and I wish them well with that. That's not an issue anymore. But I don't understand why Dunn doesn't look after both parties. And I think the very least they could say is, look, they've revised the boundaries, and you'll find it on the website. We got nothing like that. There's no outreach done to any part of Monterey Hills. I live in Monterey Hills, and the residents want to know why I didn't tell them about this boundary change. And I have to say, because I'm the representative from Monterey Hills, I have to say to them, I didn't know. And they want to know, how can that be? How could 16-year-olds vote to take away land from Monterey Hills? And I have no answers for them. And when I've asked people, they always say, well, it's open land. Why do you care? Well, I want to know why Herman cares if it's open land. Why take it from us? Thank you.
Well, Glenn Bailey, Glenn.
Glenn Bailey speaking as an individual. A couple of things at least one of these you've heard before, and that is on the city's early notification service in terms of the number of subscribers. Just a reminder that the last time that tally was done was April of last year, so it's now been more than a year. I know in the past when we've been able to get those numbers, it's been done through this commission. So apparently you have a lot of power to be able to get that to happen. So I'm just reminding you that that's still on a wish list, especially with the beginning of the fiscal year. It's a good benchmark for budget preparation in terms of how people have done during the past year with regards to building up those numbers of subscribers. So it'd be really nice if that could be done by the end of June. I know it's a busy time of the year, but if you don't do it now, it's going to slip by and not get done. Number two, I mentioned your last meeting about the Congress of Neighborhoods. We had a mixer event at our meeting this past weekend, and it was the weekend before. It was successful in bringing in some new people, and also gave us a reason to reach out to all neighborhood council members throughout the city to increase awareness of the Congress. So I think that's a good thing to do. I just want to remind the commissioners, as you visit your various neighborhood councils, that we are trying to raise funding from neighborhood councils in terms of their contributions. We've kind of upped the ante because it does cost about $40,000 to put on the Congress, the various expenses. And so if every neighborhood council who's willing would consider giving $1,000, some won't. Not at all. Some don't give any. This year they might. The next year. So the deadline last I heard is June 1, unless that's been changed. So that really gives them the month of May in order to do that. And the last comment, building on something I said at the last meeting with regards to including council file numbers, so I was glad to see that on item 14. I do think you could take the opportunity, I'm talking about council file numbers on your agenda items so that neighborhood councils could weigh in with community impact statements. On item number 9 regarding budget advocates, you could include the council file 17-0600 as the city's budget council file on that. And you could include it in the reference under general manager's report regarding the budget. Also regarding subdivision, even though it's an ordinance, you could include that council file number because some councils have weighed in on it. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Switching gears. We will begin with our formal introduction. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the meeting of the Board of Neighborhood Commissioners in the Canoga Park Neighborhood Council area. Today is Tuesday, the second day of May, 2017. If you're not on our mailing list and would like to add your name and become more involved in the Neighborhood Council system, please sign up at the table on my right. During the meeting tonight, we will discuss the items listed on the meeting agenda in numerical order, unless I receive a request from a board member to take an item out of order. Copies of the agenda and related documents are available for you once again on the table over to my right. If any board member has a conflict of interest at the time an agenda item is announced for discussion, the board member should identify the general nature of the conflict, indicate that he or she is recusing him or herself from participating in the matter, and leave the room during the duration of the discussion of the item. Before we make a decision on any item, members of the public are provided with the opportunity to provide comments on the item under consideration. Members of the public who wish to speak on multiple agenda items shall be allowed to speak for a total of 5 minutes per meeting and may allocate time in 1 minute increments per item when the agenda item is called. Or they may speak during the multiple agenda item comment period. During the multiple agenda item comment period, say that one fast a number of times, a member of the public may speak for up to 5 minutes on multiple agenda items. If you have a general comment on an item that is not listed on the agenda, then you may provide us with your comment during the public comment period of the meeting. Public comment should be directed to the board rather than to individuals. Please understand that there are applicable laws that limit the actions that we may take during tonight's meeting. Thus, we may be legally prohibited from acting on a concern that you've expressed. However, note that your concern may become the topic of discussion at a future board meeting after we've had the chance to list the item on the agenda. Please fill out a speaker card for each item you want to address so that you may be heard on any agenda item. You will be called by me when it is your turn to speak. Please be sure to place the number of the item or items you wish to speak on the card or cards. Copies of the speaker cards are located on the table, once again, to my right. If you intend to speak on any item or items, you must turn in your speaker card or cards prior to the start of the meeting or prior to the call of that item. Please hand the speaker card to Mario, who is seated to my left. When a person is speaking, they're entitled to courtesy and respect. Please refrain from any other discussion in the room. If you wish to chat, then please take that discussion outside while our meeting is in session. We treat each other with respect. I should know this one by heart. That means we act with civility and decorum. Competing viewpoints may be articulated without the need for inappropriate or uncivil actions. Last but not least, please turn your cell phones off or to silent for the remainder of the meeting, including commissioners. Thank you very much. Can we get a roll call, please?
Commissioner Schaefer?
Here.
Commissioner Atkinson?
Here.
Commissioner Derek Quiros, absent. Commissioner Lafarga, absent. Commissioner Lippman,
here.
Commissioner Sinclair, absent. And Commissioner Webby,
here.
We do have a quorum. All right. Back to our agenda. I have not seen any CIS or board resolutions with regards to any of our agenda items. Is there anyone who wishes to speak during the multiple agenda item comment period? All right. Moving on then to number five, approval of the minutes of the meeting of April 17th. I'm going to say I'm really enjoying the new minutes. I don't know about the rest of you, but they are much more informative. You don't laugh. They're a lot more informative than they were for a while. And that's because we apparently now have staff, which is good. Yay, yes. So.
To accept the minutes.
Okay. Is there a second?
Second.
Are there any additions or corrections? None appearing. Any objection to the minutes being approved as presented? There is none. Show the a unanimous vote. Minutes are approved as presented. Moving on. Item number six, we get to hand out 15-year certificates. This is one of the fun things of this job. Okay, Canoga Park. Do we have some people here from Canoga Park?
Yes.
Gracie, you want to start?
Yeah. No. Mike, hold on one sec before you stand up.
Give us 1 second. Hi, Gracie Liu, General Manager for the Department of Neighbor Empowerment. Good evening, everyone. So thrilled to be here tonight to share this 15th anniversary with some of our awesome neighborhood councils. But before we get to that, I would love to bring up Kevin Taylor from the office of Mayor Eric Garcetti. Who's our Valley Rep and actually a former neighborhood council president of Reseda. And we're thrilled to actually have him on the city side now, as we like to bring more neighborhood councils into the city. I'd like to bring up Kevin, and if you'd like to say a few words about some of our neighborhood councils celebrating, which would be Canoga Park, Woodland Hills Warner Center, and Van Nuys neighborhood councils.
Thank you very much, Gracie. Good evening, honorable commissioners and all our esteemed guests. I really appreciate, I want to say, first off, I do want to appreciate and respect all of the volunteer work that you do as commissioners. Thank you guys for all of your dedication and being diligent stewards of our policy making here for the neighborhood council. So thanks for that work. Thanks for traveling all the way across the city to come to our neighborhood, specifically to come right up the street from my neighborhood. I love it when you come to the West Valley. So as the mayor's West Valley rep, please keep coming back. We always welcome you here. To the neighborhood councils who are being honored tonight, Van Nuys, Canoga Park, Woodland Hills Warner Center, I want to express my congratulations to you on behalf of Mayor Eric Garcetti. I think sometimes in this, in the way we've all gone through this neighborhood council adventure together, it sometimes has become normalized or just sort of just a regular thing that we're participating in this way in democracy, in grassroots activism, in the way we do at the neighborhood council level. But it really is groundbreaking. And these neighborhood councils celebrating 15 years are pioneers. I mean, you've been doing this for 15 years, well ahead of, you know, people from all across the world. We've had delegations from all across the world that come here to find out about the Los Angeles neighborhood council system, not to mention people from all across the country. So it's not just that, you know, you're doing good work for your neighborhood or you're doing good work for Los Angeles, but you really have set the tone for what it means to participate in democracy and show citizen leadership and volunteerism for the world. And that's not an exaggeration. We've seen a lot of examples of that. So thank you for that ongoing commitment. Thank you for making our communities better, for making the city better, for making the valley better. As the mayor's West Valley rep, I do want to congratulate you on behalf of the mayor, and I look forward to many more opportunities to keep working with you in the future. So thanks very much.
Thank you, Kevin.
Thanks so much, Kevin. I also like to have our Commission President Len Schaefer say a few words as well.
I'm going to come up there this time.
All right, you come on up.
Usually I don't come up, but this is my area, okay? South Valley, where I represent. My neighborhood council's got 1 year to wait to get 15, so I'm excited about that. But, yeah, it's really nice to be able to leave the house on one of these Tuesday nights at going on 4:30 and still have time to get where the meeting is, have dinner, and be here. It's really nice. And I appreciate the other commissioners, all of whom had to travel much further than I did tonight. But I really want to say that this is one of the great things about this particular volunteer position, is that we get to come out, we get to see people we know, people we see, people we've dealt with and worked with, and see how it's continuing and how much it's grown out here in the valley. We are almost one-third of all the neighborhood councils in the city of Los Angeles. As a matter of fact, we are one-third. We're just beyond one-third. Of all the neighborhood councils in the city, and I'm really, really proud of the valley and very proud of the South Valley, and really great for you guys who are on 15 years now. Keep it up.
Yay. Oh, I just bumped my knee. I would like to at this point now invite our Canoga Park neighborhood council members, Corin Ho, Jessica. Yes, and Bobby Transtafello, yes, come on up, and please tell us a little bit about Canoga Park and your successes, your challenges, and what you're looking forward to doing for the next 15 years. Come on up. Yeah, come on up. Don't be shy. Yeah, everyone can, I just had three names on here, but everyone from the board who's here, please come up. And if you'd like to speak, please step up.
Good evening, honorable commissioners, guests. Welcome to Canoga Park. My name is Corin Ho, and I serve Canoga Park as the current president of the Neighborhood Council. Welcome again. It is a very nice feeling to be in our own home, welcoming all of you. Where we have been, Ron Clary, who was there since inception, can tell us a little bit where we've been, where we are, and where we're going. Ron.
Well, thank you, Corinne. Yeah, I had the honor of being the founding president, and it's been an interesting journey over the last 15 years. We've seen an incredible amount of change in our own area. We've seen development in our community, things like the Orange Line, other such work in our downtown area. We've seen the use of the neighborhood council system providing leadership to our community. It's interesting that some of the leaders that we've had, in fact, I even had a comment here, just want to, we had better relationships with our elected leaders. We've been better able to advise the political administrative leaders of the city. We've had more active participation in governmental decisions among our community members. And as I was saying about, we've even seen a new improved level of participation compared to where things were. Oddly enough, I'm old enough to remember before the 15 years and where we were here in Canoga Park. I guess there's probably one or two of you commissioners who remember what things were like before. And we've seen some people elevated and become active in the community. We had the honor of having my successor as president, Miguel Santiago, is now a member of the California State Assembly. And we've seen other people move into roles of civic leadership. And it's helped us to find out how to work together in the community. We found out what works in our community. The best practices that we've learned from other communities have sometimes been helpful. Sometimes it's taught us what doesn't work in our community. But I'd like to stress that this has been a terrific experience for all of us, and it's been an honor to get to know the people from the city, the people, the volunteers from the city, and everyone who's worked together, who's helped to make our community better. Thank you.
Well, I'm so excited. I've been here in the Neighborhood Council for 4 years or more. 5 years, I think. 5 years. And Corinne recruited me. She was recruiting somebody else on my job. And that somebody say, oh, I know the best person you can recruit. And I always say yes. My husband say, you have to learn how to say no because you're not getting paid. You're getting volunteer work. But I love my job. I love helping people. And I've been living here in Canoga Park for like 27 years. And I love it here. And what we've been doing in Canoga Park, we've been volunteering, helping the community. We just had the fire department donate, the fire department, the police department, churches, the volunteers got together, and we went to paint fire hydrants. And we had 237 volunteers, and we painted 240 fire hydrants. And we still have more to go. We still need more to do. So we were grateful because we had a lot of help and a lot of volunteers, and we were so excited, kids and adults and seniors, everybody was there. And not only that, we cleaned the bulky vitamins with Jenny Portillo from Bob Blumenfield office. We go and clean up the streets, and we do a lot of stuff, not only that, and food banks and all that, and school. I always tell my kids and my families, go back to school, learn English, and I'm always motivating them. I'm a very positive person. Like, you know, I'm nervous right now, but I'm so excited. 15 years in the community, so this is great. Thank you so much.
This is my perfect opportunity to say to the Neighborhood Council system in general that I am so grateful for this great learning. Somebody introduced me to the Neighborhood Council, didn't know what it was, didn't even know it was political, just wanted to help the community, and I was in for the greatest learning ever. So I'm looking forward to take that learning and possibly apply it to something where it will really affect change. So I want to thank everybody in the Neighborhood Council system who are here today, who are not here today, who couldn't be with us, for the volunteering time, because it does take time, dedication, passion to do the very slow work that we do, very slow but on steroid at the same time, if that makes any sense. So thank you to everyone, and thank you.
Well, it's my pleasure on behalf of the department and the Board of Neighbor Commissioners to present you with your 15-year certificate. Ooh. So here you go. And we have our special cool 15-year pins that are made out of wood. They're pretty neat. We'll give you some for your board, too.
Thank you so much.
And then we would love to bring the commissioners up and take a pic. Yay. Yeah, should we go that way? Let's go that way. I think maybe we should go that way so we don't have the bathroom sign behind us.
Yes, look very dignified.
See you. How are you?
Oh, I know, right? I'm like, oh, I gotta go. Hi. Kevin, do you want to get in the picture? No, get in the photo. I'll send it to you. Yeah. All right, guys. Right here. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. All right, and right over here. Congratulations.
Thank you, Commissioner. Okay. So the next neighborhood council, did you have a question? Yes. Oh, why don't we have some more right now? You want to share? Okay. So the next neighborhood council that we're going to celebrate 15 years with is Woodland Hills Warner Center Neighborhood Council. I think I have Ray Cole up here. Is anyone from Woodland Hills Warner Center coming up? All right. So we'll probably skip that. But I do want to give a shout out to Woodland Hills Warner Center. They've done amazing stuff with planning and land use in their community and have been very instrumental in building out the Warner Center. So we'll make sure that we get that certificate over to that board when their next meeting is. So let's just give a hand to Woodland Hills Warner Center. Okay, and the last neighborhood council we're going to honor is Van Nuys Neighborhood Council. Woohoo! So I saw Jason Ackerman, Steve Friedman, and Carino De La Cuesta. I'm sorry if I'm butchering these names. Jerry Martin. Yes, come on up. I don't know, did Veronica make it too? No. Okay, why don't you guys come on up and like talk to us a little bit about Van Nuys Neighborhood Council, past, right, present, future?
Trying
to
sort out who's
going to
talk about what.
Oh, you get your phone.
Is he still on the mount?
Yes. Yeah, I do
you.
That sometimes.
Good evening, neighborhood council land. My name is Jason Ackerman, and I am the vice president of the Van Nuys Neighborhood Council. We are one of the oldest communities in the San Fernando Valley, established in 1911. We are home to 100,000 people, and we are awesome. We are the transit and civic heart of this wonderful valley, and it is a pleasure serving on this board. I actually got my start on the Encino Neighborhood Council. I grew up in Encino, but my mom kicked me out at a certain point. I had to find a place to live, and I decided to move to Van Nuys because the rent was affordable and there's good transit, and I wanted to be part of this amazing board for some reason. it's been a pleasure to serve as vice president and to continue on the legacy of this very interesting neighborhood council. Let Carino De La Cuesta come up and give a little background if he wants to. No?
I don't know what the background is.
Well, you were on the board before I am. I was, so.
Okay.
Share, please.
Hi, my name is Carino De La Cuesta. I'm from Van Nuys Neighborhood Council. I've been a board member going on its fourth year. The reason why I decided to go to Neighborhood Council, specifically in Van Nuys, is because I grew up in the area since I was 10 and seeing the changes and everything. And I think I remember back 15 years ago or even longer, the reason why neighborhood councils came is because the valley wanted to succeed from the city. And I thought that, you know, because nobody didn't hear anything from the valley or didn't really care. So when neighborhood councils started coming up, it gave an opportunity for people to speak, to control, to do anything in their power to improve the area or to improve their situation. I kind of see like neighborhood councils being like a box of chocolate. You never know what you're gonna get. You know, you get a lot of people showing up, you get a lot of people that you thought they were good people and they come in your board and then they start, you know, backstabbing you and all that. But I think the reason why, you know, we're all in here for neighborhood council is because we, it's about the community that we're representing, and hopefully we could improve that and to be transparent and to engage and to be a part of the city. And I think neighborhood council is that part. And as far as Van Nuys, I think Van Nuys is has a lot of potential just because of what you're seeing with the metro and with all the development and with sort of the prices that's starting to increase. You see Van Nuys as a way of, you know, moving forward. So I'm glad that I'm part of the planning and land use, which I think it's probably the most important committee in the board, because you want to engage what things are going to happen in the future. So I'll bring Jerry in. Thanks.
Jerry has tapped me to step in his stead, so you get to hear me talk again. Hooray. So yeah, I mean, as Karina said, we are a community in transition to, you know, a much, hopefully much more equitable future and a much more sustainable future. Not to say that we weren't. We were definitely one of the best planned communities in the San Fernando Valley. That's one of the things that drew me to Van Nuys in the first place. I did a project on the old red car system in the San Fernando Valley and in the core of Van Nuys. Between the car dealerships and the Civic Center, there's a nice little stretch where all the blocks are 323 feet long. So that's pretty cool. But anyway, little known fact, we have our own city hall. Well, it's actually all your city. It's the Valley City Hall. And we have video conferencing there, and we would like to bring that back. But we need to buy in from all the neighborhood councils in the Valley to chip in for that. We have some wonderful, I'll be polite and call them watchdogs, Miriam and Donna, who you may know from city council meetings, who are always on our case about bringing back video conferencing. So please help us bring back video conferencing to Van Nuys City Hall, because it is a schlep to get down to city council. And, you know, it's crazy because we're one third of the population out here, and we don't get one third of the time of our elected body of representatives. So maybe we should get someone to get a motion so we can file a CIS on that. But I firmly believe in the potential and the power of the neighborhood councils to really be an agent of direct democracy, not just representative democracy in this city. And it is a pleasure to be here in the presence of you all and to be honored along with Canoga Park. I have a great deal of respect for Crenho. So thank you very much for this honor, and it's great to be here. Thank you.
Thank you all, and it's my pleasure to present you with your 15-year certificate that I got fingerprints on. I'm so sorry. but in your little pins.
Awesome.
And we'll give you some for your board. They're really cool. And then I'd like to call the commissioners back up, and we can take a picture and with Kevin and our city attorney. Again, I want to congratulate all of our neighborhood councils for reaching this 15-year milestone. Yes, congratulations. And as Kevin mentioned earlier, you know, you are internationally known. We actually had a delegation from Germany come today to learn about neighbor councils and their work in their communities. So we continue to spread the neighbor council love internationally, nationally, and I thank you guys for your work and your efforts for the city of Los Angeles. And again, congratulations.
Okay. Yeah. We are going to change the order on our agenda. We are going to move to item number 12, which would be a discussion and action to approve Sylmar Neighborhood Council bylaw amendment application to replace one industrial representative and one faith-based representative with two at-large representatives who live, work, or own property or declare a stake within the Sylmar Neighborhood Council boundaries. Who from the department is going to present that? Hi.
Hey, Vanessa.
Come on up. Introduce yourself.
Hi, everyone. My name is Vanessa Serrano. I'm the new neighborhood empowerment advocate for Sylmar Neighborhood Council.
Welcome, Vanessa.
Thank you. So, it's first time coming up here and doing this, so please tell me if there's anything else I should change. But the department received and reviewed the board structure change application submitted by the Sylmar Neighborhood Council, and we recommend the approval of the Sylmar Neighborhood Council request to change the board structure from one industrial representative seat and one faith-based representative to two at-large representatives, bringing the at-large seats from 3 to 5 on the board. So in addition, the department also recommends the approval of the Sylmar Neighborhood Council's proposal to change any seat that remains vacant for more than 60 days to an at-large seat for the remainder of the term. So that's our report.
Okay.
Industrial representative, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Commissioner Atkinson.
You got somebody up here for an answer.
What is an industrial representative? What was it?
Well, an industrial representative from their bylaws. Let me see. Luckily, I have them here. I thought I had it here.
Someone here from Sylmar.
Someone from Sylmar? There you go. I thought I had them here.
We've got somebody from the neighborhood council.
Oh, yeah. Perfect. Thank you.
Would you like me to have somebody from the neighborhood council come up?
If she likes to, yeah.
Ms. Valencia, come on up.
Diane Valencia, I'm, among other things, the chair of our bylaws committee for the Sylmar Neighborhood Council. And one of the issues that we found when we did a full review this time of our bylaws is that a lot of the definitions for the particular seats were not as clear as they could have been. So we all sort of said the same thing. What is this industrial seat? What is it supposed to be? And that sort of got us down the road of considering what are the seats that typically, historically, looking back at our election cycles, have been uncontested, have been difficult to fill if there's vacancies during the term, and the industrial seat and also the faith-based seat sort of jumped out at us as being time and time again difficult to fill. Not to say that we don't support having a very broad cross-section of the community represented, but we believe that there would be no restriction of having someone with a faith-based focus certainly filling an at-large seat. But it would make it easier for us to recruit potential board members during the term for vacancies.
So did you ever decide what an industrial representative was?
Well, we do have a rather large industrial section of Sylmar. It just really wasn't very clear in the bylaws. I think it was meant to be more of like a manufacturing industrial business representative, but it never really said that. So, and now we're suggesting to get rid of it altogether.
Don't go away. Any other questions from any of the commissioners? Commissioner Lippman.
I notice within the bylaws changes. I know this is just a change in name, but it does impact the board going from a retail representative to a business representative. Can you talk a little bit more about that? 'Cause it
I don't have, let's see, bear with me 1 second.
I mean, it says retail was crossed out. Three. I mean, this number of seats hasn't changed. It's Commissioner Lippman. You just added crossed out retail. This is page
right,
19, so yeah. And then added representative business owners or representatives of a business within the neighborhood and who
right.
are 14 years old.
Okay, thank you. So in our discussion, and actually Tony Wilkinson provided some assistance and input during our bylaws discussion on this point, mm-hmm. we felt like retail was more restrictive. Mm-hmm. So what does that really mean, or what could it mean to certain people? Does that mean you own a restaurant? Do you have to own a flower shop? Can you be a realtor? Yeah. So business was more broad in the sense that we would be, able to fill the seat with a broader range of individuals.
Or potentially it cover industrial.
It could as well. Yes, it could. Yes. Yeah.
That was what I was kind of getting at is you sort of broaden the definition, which allows more folks to participate within those categories rather than having these much more narrower
yes.
categories.
So I think the overarching goal was to make our outreach efforts more inclusive rather than restrictive.
Any more questions by any of the board members of either Ms. Valencia or staff? I don't.
I don't have any more questions. I was just going to move.
Wait. We have public comment. Wayne, you want to bring the puppet up? Okay. And I'll ask, how much do you want to devote to this agenda item?
Okay, how many?
Item 12.
Item 12, how many you want? How many minutes?
1 minute.
1 minute, okay.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes, thank you. Silmar, industrial representative. Well, there's really no more business in Silmar. It's all healthcare, nonprofits. Industrials don't exist. Since we stopped building cars at the GM plant, there's been no more industry, so we do not need an industrial representative for anything there, because every time someone opens up a business to build something, you environmentalists come in. There's too much water. There's too much pollution. There's too much this and that. And then you close the factory, like with my uncle's friend, the African American, who hasn't worked in 30 years since you closed the GM plant. Reopen the GM plant and start building cars, or no on the industrial representative. Thank you.
There's no further public comments, no further questions. I'll entertain a motion.
I'd like to move that we I'd like to move that we approve the Silmar Neighborhood Council bylaw amendment application to replace one industrial representative and one faith-based representative with two at-large representatives who live, work, own property, or declare a stake within Silmar Neighborhood Council boundaries.
Second.
Okay, motion on the floor by Commissioner Lippman, seconded by Commissioner Atkinson. The motion is to move item 12. Any further discussion by the commissioners?
I mean, I would just say that this is something that we're starting to see a trend of as neighborhood councils sort of mature, is that they realize that what sort of originally was sort of hypothesized or theorized is like, okay, let's carve out a specific seat for this group. We see more and more of these sort of broadening of definitions, which I think sort of shows that, you know, the sort of idealism of let's have a faith-based representative and sort of carving that out may work better. Actually, you might be able to get more faith-based folks if they're, you know, more of an at-large seat, so that they feel that they aren't sort of within a box. So I think that's so short of maturing of the system, which I think is good.
Okay.
Call for the question.
Okay. Those in favor of the motion, please so signify.
What?
signify. So, you know, you can raise your hand, say yes.
Aye.
Doesn't matter. Okay, I see no objections, therefore it's unanimous. Bylaws have been approved. Thank you for your patience. Thank your son for his patience.
When does he get to start voting?
Soon.
Yep.
Oh. Very good. Very good. Okay, thank you. I don't see Kevin anymore. So he had a chance to speak. Moving on to item number 8. We jumped ahead. Sorry about that. Discussion with various South Valley area neighborhood council representatives. I have one card. Jill, did you want to speak during this or during general public comment? Oh, okay. Are there any persons from South Valley neighborhood councils representing their neighborhood council would like to come up and say something? I guess not. So which do you want to do? Make a comment now or later? Okay. Jill, come on up on number 8. 2 minutes.
Thank you. My name is Jill Stewart. I was the campaign manager for the Measure S on the March ballot, which was horribly defeated. However, one of the ironies of Measure S is that we won a lot of the arguments. Those arguments are that LA's planning is years and years behind other major cities, that our community plans are not up to date and are being changed lot by lot. Sometimes you have no idea what's going to appear in your neighborhood and you don't like it. We are advocating for modern planning to catch up with all of the major cities in the western United States. We are way, way behind by more than a decade, all of the major cities in the West, and yet we say we're leaders, we are not leaders. I wanted to let you know that right now the city is privately meeting about the general plan. I've been in discussions with some members of the city planning department. They are making a plan now, a general plan now, quietly. We don't think that's appropriate. We think they should be having hearings now about what they think and you think should be the general plan for Los Angeles. And the general plan is an idea. It's an aspirational document about what you want in your community, what you think the most important things are to organize around and plan around for the future. And just to give you an example, some cities have chosen, for example, in their general plan to create an urban forest to fight global warming, to plant and keep alive thousands and thousands and thousands of new trees is one of the most effective ways to create a livable community. And other cities in the United West, U.S. Western states have come up with plans for historic preservation of specific neighborhoods that they treasure and cherish. All of these are organizing principles. We have heard now from planning that their organizing principle for the South Valley, which is going to get the next round of community plans, their organizing principle will be to put a lot of density around the orange line and change the orange line into fixed rail. Most of the city's development along the lines, if you've read about it, is luxury development. It is unaffordable luxury development. The city has built about 15,000 luxury apartments and homes in the last year, and only about 1,500 affordable. And affordable means different things to different people. So we are urging you, and we are planning now, to do more of a ground up. We believe that you should plan from the ground up and tell the city what you want before they have their first public meeting in September. That's far too long to wait for the general plan to get rolling, and you should all talk about what you want in your communities and be ready to tell the city your dreams, because they are going to do a top-down approach that we fundamentally disagree with. We believe in democracy, in the little people deciding what should happen in their areas, and we are the little people. Thank you very much, and I'll be back.
Thank you.
Commission President Schaefer,
Corin and Jessica and Jason have cut cake, so we're going to just quietly distribute to folks as you continue on.
Okay, I was going to say we could recess if you wanted to.
I think it's fine because I think that
because
we started
late.
Yeah, so we're just going to pass cake around, and if you guys want cake, if you don't want it, just keep passing it down. But thank you to Canoga Park for doing this. Yeah.
And since we're allowed a brief comment with regards to comments by the public, I know that they are coming to neighborhood councils in the South Valley, especially for the Encino-Tarzana community plan. And so they will be outreach. They are outreaching to neighborhood councils, at least in my area. All right.
There was a meeting yesterday that a couple people here attended, the Homelessness Civic University that the mayor put on, and that was one of the main topics, was affordable housing as part of that conversation. So there was homelessness liaisons for every single neighborhood council who've been really interested in that topic.
Okay, very good. All right. Moving on. Anybody here representing the budget advocates? No one representing the budget advocates. Okay. General public comment. We do have one more card for general public comment. Wayne, is it going to be you? Oh, you've got the puppet listed. Okay. Bring the puppet up. And general public comment. 3 minutes. 3 minutes. Yeah, it gets like everybody else.
Go ahead.
Yes, good. So today, we had my friend here and his process server served Herb Wesson Jr. with his lawsuit. Yes, you can serve the city council president with a lawsuit. It gets accepted by the city attorney. Then we're also serving Assistant City Attorney Hugo Rossiter tomorrow with his copy of the lawsuit. So now, as you may know, and of course Carmen Hawkins will know, once that Hugo Rossiter gets served, the city will need to expend money on outside counsel because of a conflict of interest. So now, millions and millions of dollars are going to be spent doing what? Shuffling papers as they attempt to unravel the controversy surrounding the last 2.5 years of my friend here, and I think you'll pick it up.
Oh, thank you. Yes, the bull is correct. 2015, 2016, 2017, for 3 straight years, I have been accused or had to been arraigned on a false criminal charge by your city council, and they just can't stop. So today, they got their little lawsuit served on them, and Herb Wesson, hiding in his office, says, Wayne Spindler has a TRO, but I didn't go in his office, and 10 police officers had to go on the 10th floor. You see what you're doing? You're wasting your time on me. You're making me the city. You're making me the budget. That's why you can't get nothing done. It's me, me, me. And all you have to do is write me a check and pay me to leave. And I'll go 60 miles north on the 101 to Ventura County and never come back again. Wouldn't you like that? Let's take a vote. How many people want me to get paid to leave the city of L.A. permanently to never come back again? It's unanimous. Tell the city to settle it and stop spending the money because the place is broke. Everything is destroyed. The road, you can't drive on them. The traffic lights went out today. They had to close Victory Boulevard this morning. The city's destroying itself. Why? Because they're focused on things like me. It's a puppet. It costs $5. And now they're going to spend $3-4 million defending my lawsuit and Michael Hunt's lawsuit. And another one's coming. You don't even know about this yet. The third lawsuit's going to come from somebody you don't even know yet. But his name is Stephen Rohde. attorney, and he's going to file it. I don't even have nothing to do with it.
Jason?
Hello, Honorable Board of Neighbor Commissioners and ever-so-patient audience. I was so privileged as to be able to attend the first ever, I believe, Civic University on Homelessness, which had its final session last night. And one of the things that was brought up is that we have a 200-page plan on how to deal with homelessness. Now, I mean, I'm a little bit weird. I like to read legislation, you know, and the thicker the better. I actually read the sidewalk repair plan that Mitch Englander put out a couple of years ago. That was a riveting read. So here's what I'm thinking. We have a lot of really dense city texts that we kind of expect people to know about, but we write them at ridiculous lengths that nobody really wants to read, unless they're a glutton for civic regulations like I am. So here's my proposal. I think that the Board of Neighborhood Commissioners in Dunn should work with the pool of talent we have in the neighborhood councils to set up either a program with the universities or amongst the board members who have the appropriate equipment to do LibriVox-style audio recordings of these texts. So while you're stuck in traffic and you're trying to dodge all the terrible pop music, you could also have the alternative of listening to the city charter or the housing plan, and you could actually become more knowledgeable about this stuff while you're stuck in your frustration about traffic. By the way, there's also a traffic plan you might want to read. I pitched this idea last night to a couple of people. It seemed to be met pretty well. I even found some young people who were like, yeah, I love audiobooks. And I'm like, you want to listen to the city charter? She's like, yeah. I'm like, okay, so I'm not alone here. So maybe we should put our talents together and try and figure out some way to make the information that we're depending on the citizens to know more accessible and understandable to actually digest in a human fashion via like auditory as well as just visual. I really think that the planning department, which I know this is not, but some of us spend a lot of time with the planning department, really needs to do a better job doing videos like Dunn does and like the Parks does to explain how the planning process works. And if the Board of Neighborhood Commissioners can write a recommendation to the planning department, or somebody here wants to write a letter to the planning department, say, hey, you guys need to do better videos to explain zoning and affordable housing and all this other stuff that you're expecting everybody to understand that nobody does. Go talk to Dunn, go talk to DOT, go talk to the Parks and Rec Department that have good explanatory videos that they put out on a fairly regular basis instead of just having long commission meetings on video. Thank you.
Sharon Brewer, Sharon.
Hi, Sharon Brewer. I wanted to, one of the suggestions I have, and I'm wondering why the city clerk isn't listed on your agenda to take and report on funding issues with the neighborhood council, since they've taken it over, so questions could be asked about the funding on there. The other thing is I'm having a problem with neighborhood council not having agendas, minutes, copies of NPGs for the board or public to vote on, and missing MERs, like more than 5 months of missing MERs, and I'm concerned about going into the new system. And you've got neighborhood councils, according to the city clerk's webpage, that a lot of them are almost missing an entire fiscal year of MERs. And if they can't get that together, how are they going to deal with the new system? The other thing is there's a bylaws amendment that was done by Reseda that ends up going and having a statement, which I don't know if they went through this city attorney, but it says any involuntary removal of a board member shall render that individual ineligible to hold a seat on the RNC board for a period of not less than 2 years, and any committee membership shall be immediately terminated as the second. And this is being added to removal of a board member on there. One, I don't know if they can do it. There's been question on it, but they went ahead and voted on it. The other thing is there is no definition required on what you can be removed for. Can you get removed for First Amendment rights, or is it basically stakeholder loss of stakeholder status? And censure is the same thing. People need to know what they can be removed for. And so I don't know what's going to happen. This actually got voted on last night. And it was 8-1 no, which was me, and one in abstention. But it started out at 4 years to go and do it. And I don't think that it's right that a neighborhood council should be able to go and determine. That's an entire term. And I'm just worried that it's going to go and, you know, somebody will see that they can do it, and then you're going to have this going into the other neighborhood councils. But again, the biggest thing is tell people what they can be removed for. Don't just let it, people not knowing, because I've already gone through this once, and it was because of stakeholder status and nothing else. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. All right, moving forward. General Manager's report. General Manager Liu.
Thank you. This past few weeks, we've actually just been focused on budget. As you know, Mayor Eric Garcetti released his proposed budget on the 20th. Bless you. And that's now gone to City Council, and we did send out to neighborhood councils an email of our budget request letter to City Council, and it's focused on four areas. The first being additional funding for trainings, online trainings, basically doing on-demand trainings for ethics funding, harassment, you know, ADA compliance, so that neighbor councils would have the same access to what we call is Cornerstone, which is what all city employees have. So in addition to those trainings, you also have access to the trainings that employees have, such as, you know, to Word and PowerPoint, and like those types of trainings are also available. And in addition, we'd be working with the Department on Disability to update the ADA trainings, and also to work with neighborhood councils to make sure that all their meeting locations are ADA compliant, websites and all the things that newsletters that they reach out with, agendas, those types of things. The other part, the second part, is the Emergency Management Department collaboration for the budget request for emergency bins and jumpstart program and emergency communications, which the commission has already taken action on. And part of that is because it's under policy, it also includes a separate from this item, a $30,000 increase in the budget for Congress and Parallel Awards and the budget advocates. The third thing that we did was for elections, and it is to do election outreach. So out of the about $380,000 that we asked for to conduct a more robust election outreach, particularly for candidates, because that kind of came up in the 2016 elections where neighbor councils, you know, gave us feedback that they felt it was unfair for them to provide outreach funds or vote on outreach funds
for their elections to find people to replace them or to run against them. So they wanted the neighbor count, the Department of Neighbor Empowerment to come and do a more robust election outreach. So out of that 380 that we initially requested, we were only funded 106,000, which basically ends up being about almost 1,100 per neighborhood council, and we feel that that is insufficient to really do a robust election outreach. Part of that, the funds too, is which we weren't funded on, was for online voting, and we know that, you know, city council is still considering that item, and we will be working with city council on that. So as neighborhood councils are weighing in on the election timing, as you know, the city clerk has to adjust their even number years of administering the neighborhood council elections to odd number years. So one of the situations would be to actually push the 2018 elections to 2019 and extend the current board terms. And so we provided some different options for funding online voting if that was going to happen. So for instance, if we did push it, we could continue building out the platform if city council approved it for voter registration, and we would take the existing funds that we were given to do a more robust voter registration, bless you, citywide. And city clerk would also be doing that as well, continuing to build out online voting if elections were pushed. Of the 96 neighborhood councils, we only have received 12 responses to the election timing, and of the 12, 9 neighborhood councils voted yes to push the 2018 elections to 2019. The other 3 voted no to maintain the existing neighborhood council elections for 2018. The fourth item that we asked for was to put aside 25% of any unspent neighborhood council funds into a special fund that would basically be an equity fund. It would allow neighborhood councils to apply if they needed extra funds for translation, interpretation, capacity building, outreach. And I think this is a long overdue fund. We've usually asked for this every year. But I really think that given that, you know, we have soon to be certifying neighborhood council, Herman Neighborhood Council being, you know, a smaller neighborhood council of around 3,800 stakeholders, that, you know, when we look at that in comparison to some of the bigger neighborhood councils of 90 to 100,000 stakeholders, well actually typically residents, it could be up to like 500,000 stakeholders, we really need to find a way for the funding to be equitable, and particularly in areas that need translation interpretation. I know some neighborhood councils, you know, spend almost 60-70% of their yearly allocation just on translation and interpretation. So other neighborhood councils probably should be spending that amount too, but instead they don't. And so that kind of trying to include communities, underrepresented communities, is not really happening. So those are the 4 major items that we asked for. And again, this was sent out in an email to folks. When we went before the Budget and Finance Committee on Monday, they were wanting reports back on all of the items, not on the 25%. I think Council Member Blumenfeld really wanted us to do a special study on that, so that would be a little more long-term, that he wants to know how much realistically should be set aside for translation and interpretation per neighborhood council. So that's going to take us a little time to kind of sort out those types of numbers and do estimates like that, so that likely will come later. So we're working with CAO's office to provide report backs on the other 3 items in terms of the more detail. Aside from that, we're happy to say that our new staff, including Vanessa, are out in the field already. They're just hit the ground running, and We're so pleased to have them with us. And so you'll be seeing more of our staff at your neighbor council meetings. And again, we hope to be at 100% staffing of all neighbor council meetings by the end of this fiscal year. Subdivision, we have the Herman Neighborhood Council that will likely be going on, I believe, now May 25th before the commission for review of their bylaws and certification. The subdivision proposed Skid Row Neighborhood Council had an election challenge, and so that will be reviewed tomorrow night, and we will have a decision by the election challenge panel. So it will be heard in downtown at Deaton Hall. So I think boundary amendment application, there is a item here, 11D, in terms of procedures, outreach to affected neighborhood councils. When we do receive a boundary amendment application, we do notify any neighborhood council to let them know that this is happening, because typically when there's a boundary adjustment application, we want the neighborhood council to either be in agreement and submit a boundary adjustment application on their side, so that we can have like two that come before the commission that is considered, so that both are adjusted simultaneously. If it is a overlap area, we don't have to have that other application, but we do notify the other neighborhood council to let them know that this is happening, so that they would have the opportunity to take action and weigh in if they would want to do that. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Mr. Atkinson.
Thank you. Two questions with regards to the increase in funding for outreach for voting. Is this based on a philosophy that the neighborhood councils kind of needed help and they shouldn't do all of their own outreach?
Well, it was something that neighbor councils were, you know, particularly vocal about when in the post-election town halls, that they and we found that our candidate numbers did go down this in 2016, and we had for the first time a lot of resistance. We found citywide where neighbor councils really felt like, why are you forcing me to go find my own competition? And you know, it's a fair question. And so I think that's why we propose a more robust election outreach budget.
All right, that's what I thought. So I have a second question. Ever since I've been on the commission, we do talk about outreach for voter participation, and then we have voter participation. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not. And then I go visit my neighborhood council meetings, and, you know, there's like, you know, 20 people or 25 people on a good night, maybe 40. We don't do anything for outreach for the neighborhood councils to help them grow. It's all based on elections, and I don't know if that's based on numbers, but how come we don't discuss, or the department, discuss more how you get people to a meeting, how you get people to a neighborhood council meeting to help those neighborhood councils grow, to get people involved in elections, and then you go to a meeting and there's 10, 15, 20 people. I don't think you've accomplished anything but got new officers.
I think that's a very valid point. As we were talking to the city council, we were saying that outreach should be ongoing all the time. So it's not just in election years, although that tends to, you know, kind of draw people a little more, it's a little kick. But it is something that needs to happen in off election years. So it is definitely something that we're looking at. In fact, you know, part of our metrics that we're going to do this year is to actually do 96 neighborhood council 101 meetings or workshops to the community before the end of the fiscal year, and to continue doing that. I would love to do that on like a monthly basis and work with neighborhood councils on that, so that there's a continuous, you know, effort to go out there to different communities to really tell them about neighborhood councils and how they can participate.
I had another question, but I forgot what it was.
It'll come back.
Commissioner Lippman? I really like the idea of having this special fund. You know, I think particularly as we look at the potential for more subdivisions, having resources that certain neighborhood councils who may have bigger challenges such as translation services or, as I've been saying, daycare and child care
yes.
needs, which was part of the original neighborhood council plan. It said translation services and child care needs. Mm-hmm. I know many, as we saw tonight, many neighborhood council members struggle with a 6-7 o'clock meeting. I'm missing my kids' bedtime, and I know many others do. Any way that we can reduce barriers, especially for larger communities, to participation in neighborhood councils, I think is a good thing. And if the application to provide in some ways it's competitive, but not really, if it's just for neighborhood councils and they know that they can access it, I don't think it's going to bust the bank, but I do think that for neighborhood councils who do need a few extra resources, I think it could be critical. And I think it's actually, if you think about it, it doesn't have to be adversarial. It can really be like, okay, you know, certain neighborhood councils don't need all of their resources, and others do. And so it can be more collegial in that way. So I really like that idea, and if there's any way that our commission can push that forward, I'd love to be in conversation with the department about that. If there's a policy, I'd be happy to discuss it. I am concerned, though, about pushing the election. As we continually say, we're all volunteers. And, you know, for some folks to commit another year or more, as some people have already hit four or will be hitting 4 years for the boards that are staggered, that's a lot of time. And so, you know, I know that this is one of those decisions that's probably going to come down to the wire, where city council is going to, you know, I think this is the time where neighborhood councils need to step up and say something. You know, and come to a decision, you know, do we hold the elections in 2018 for a one-year term and then do it in 2019 and then 21? But I think that this is going to be a major cause for concern, and it surprises me that only 12 neighborhood councils have spoken up about this. I think we need to do more outreach on it, and I'm glad you brought it up tonight. And please continue. I mean, we saw the number of council files over, I think, 16, and we'll get to that later for council file 15-1022-S2, which relates to vote in the elections. I'd like to see more engagement on that because this is critical, and it's gonna rankle a lot of folks who are just like, I didn't sign up for this. You know, I want to do my public service, but not you know, and I speak from experience. I mean, I had my term shortened because that date was changed, and I think we just need some consistency. It's kind of getting ridiculous. I mean, this is crazy. Like, I had my term shortened, you know, because there was some decision from a high that they were changing it. And now this is going to either lengthen or shorten other people's terms. So it's getting ridiculous, and I think we need to have some consistency.
Yes, I would again, encourage neighbor councils, and we've tried to encourage them to take action. I think more neighbor councils actually have taken action. We just haven't received their form yet. And we tried to, you know, there was a May 1st deadline. We got the form out on March 1st. And I think some neighbor councils are realizing that they had this deadline, and some of them are trying to still get it in. And I encourage them. I say, even though we had a deadline on May 1st, please continue to submit, because I just said May 1st because I want to make sure that City Council was able to see it before they made any budget determinations. And there's still some time for, you know, I just don't know when they're going to make any final decisions on the city elections because they're sorted out during, I think, the budget process about whether it's going to get pushed.
Sorry.
I do think that if they are unable to find additional funding for election outreach, that I really think that it does need to be pushed because I think it'll just be terrible.
Commissioner Lipman, again, and this is my point of personal privilege, but there are certain folks in the room who will take this to heart. We're about to have an election. We're spending $6 million for probably an election where less people are going to vote than in all the neighborhood council elections combined, and we could take a fraction of that money for the neighborhood council elections. So I think it's just a gross misuse of our public funds to have this citywide election and then to say to the neighborhood council, so sorry, we don't have enough money for your election, when we can engage more people in more significant decisions than this. I'm not belittling the decision being made on March, but I just think it's ridiculous that all that money is being spent on a citywide election for that one issue when we could fund neighborhood council elections for the next 12 years, right? Because it's like $500,000 to do neighborhood council elections. We could literally fund neighborhood council elections for the next 12 years if they didn't have this election. It just makes me frustrated. So I hope folks out there submit a council file.
Yes, yes. Please weigh in on this.
Commissioner Webby.
At our next meeting on May 15th, we are going to hear another boundaries issue, and I'm wondering if there's an update or some information you can give us on whether or not there's been successful outreach, as I'm hoping there has been, to Hollywood United Neighborhood mm-hmm. Council and Hollywood Hills West regarding the issue that was brought to us earlier.
Deputy City Attorney Carmen Hawkins, I must instruct the commissioners that you cannot be engaged in outside information or things involving subdivision matters that may be coming before you for adjudication. And the flip of that is when you look at potential other areas, it may overlap in terms of potential influence. So I would just...
Maybe I need to be more specific with the question.
Yeah.
At the meeting where we elected to hold it over to May 15th, the department was directed to make outreach
yes.
to those entities to bring them together, and I'm wondering if that okay. has taken place.
But
is that inappropriate at this time?
At this time, yes.
Thank you. That's why I love you being here. All right. Thank you.
Well, I will just say very briefly that we have an update on that, but we're not sure at this point whether or not it needs to go to the commission, but that's the only thing that I'm going to say for now about that.
Okay.
Yep.
Very good.
Yeah, I remember a question. Commissioner Hackinson, when we were talking about, again, back on elections and, you know, getting more money to help neighborhood councils, you know, do outreach, and so it's sort of related to what you were talking about. One of the other issues that I noticed in my area, and I don't know if it's out here or any other area, is that so many new people are participating in neighborhood councils and they don't know what they're doing. And it's because even though some neighborhood councils say we're going to have an orientation, if you're interested in running for office, please come and, you know, learn about the neighborhood councils, and then you find out that folks don't go. And it seems to me there ought to be a policy that says if you're going to run for a neighborhood council and you've never run before, that there ought to be some training, or you ought to be able to come to those neighborhood council community information things to find out what the office, what you're supposed to be doing in the office you're running for. And again, it's we're so busy trying to get people out to vote, and there's no follow through afterwards. Either there's no people coming to the meeting, and those that are at the meeting don't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And so it just seems to me that there should be some kind of policy. Is that something that we as a board could put on the agenda and discuss, that there should be some kind of policy that says that folks running for neighborhood council positions need to have orientation before they actually run?
My understanding about having prerequisites to running is such as like this training. I think city attorney had an issue with it, but I'll follow up and ask. We were able to do like a very brief, like 3-minute video of like what it means to actually run as a candidate as they're going through their candidate application. It was very short. And we had over 5,000 views of that, which I thought was helpful. Maybe it scared away some folks, but that's good. And, you know, so they understand what that, you know, being a neighbor council takes a lot of work. But I'm happy to take that back with city attorney and see if that's something that the commission can do.
And I want to say something, and Carmen, you can take it back to the city attorney. You can always tell us what we can't do, but there's never any way that the city attorney helps us say what we can do. And it just seems to me that to say, well, we can't do an orientation with people and make them learn what they're supposed to do at neighborhood council, we can't do that. There must be a way to do it. And I guess I'm used to, when I worked for the state of California, we had attorneys for our committees in the Assembly and the Senate. And oftentimes they would say, you can't do that, but let us work on how it can be done. And I know that you want the neighborhood councils to be independent and you don't want to interfere, but there's some things that they just don't do. And one of those is knowing how the heck they're going to run a neighborhood council. And there's got to be some way to say, look, you got to have training. You can't just walk in and say you're going to run. In one of my neighborhood councils, that's what two women did. They came in and said they were interested in running. They didn't go to the orientation. They got elected. And then they turn around and think that they could ask for money for their nonprofits. And they're on the board of the neighborhood council. And they thought that that was a correct thing to do. They had no training, didn't go to any orientation, and did that. So it seems to me there's got to be a way to train these folks on what there is to do. And there's so much to learn. And I admire anybody that wants to be a treasurer of a neighborhood council. And I know that the training is on a computer. And contrary to what the young man said about our good training, I think they're the most boring trainings in the world. And I think they need to be simplified and a little bit more interesting. And I know that the city attorney has tried to do some in-person trainings, and I think that's the only way to get it done. So that's my...
Speaking of training, is really quick. I just want to... I just was reminded by Semi Park, our director of neighborhood operation, neighborhood council operations, that there we do have ethics training with the city attorney, live ethics training, and May. So in the Valley, it's the 22nd. Thank you, Sharon. And then there's one on May 17th, and then also one on May 25th. And this is all on our Power Lake calendar, and it's also in the profiles. So please check that out. And if no other questions,
actually there aren't.
Oh, okay.
A couple of comments.
Sure.
Can I?
Deputy City Attorney.
Thank you. May I address the commissioner's comment, if that's okay? Okay. I think, Commissioner Atkinson, the concern is that under the plan, the charter of the plan and the admin code, there are defined roles for the commission versus the department. And part of your concern of what has been lack of, I believe the general manager will agree, was because of the cuts to their budget and the substantial loss of staff over the last few years actually hindered their ability to provide some of the types of trainings and things that you've addressed. Now, my understanding with the department having to bring on almost a full staff now of NEAs and supervisors, that there are plans in the works that there will be hands-on training with all 96 neighborhood councils over the course of the next year. I haven't had to say a year,
because it's 96 neighborhood councils, but a lot of the issues that you raise are already being reworked and addressed by the department going forward, that there will be staff actually attending neighborhood council board meetings themselves to provide assistance. Our office, the three of us that I am, or 2.5, we have fully committed to work hand in hand with the department of conducting live trainings, particularly on ethics trainings, and then being of assistance in the other trainings that they are doing over again the course of the year. I don't know if Glenn Bailey is still here or if he left, but I think he put up with me for 5 hours on Sunday. That I've also at the invitation and the acceptance of the members of the planning committee of Congress of Neighborhoods, that they've allowed me to come in and help with addressing a lot of the topics that will be dealt with on September 9th at City Hall from 7:30 to 4. I'm putting in a plug because, again, a lot of issues that you're raising, we will have workshops that day that will be put on, and that we will be encouraging every neighborhood council to be in attendance or make sure that that they have adequate representation to get the knowledge that's being put out.
So I have a question, Commissioner Atkinson, again, and I do appreciate the explanation about what's going on and some of the stuff I knew about. Again, back on the issue, though, which you haven't addressed, is the fact that people are coming in, unless you're saying, well, they'll train them afterwards, that people are coming in and they're saying that they want to run for a seat on the neighborhood council. Then the neighborhood council says, okay, we're going to do an orientation. Please come and learn about what that position means and what you have to do, and the folks don't come, and they still run, and they don't know what they're doing. You've addressed very well, I think, what will happen now that you have more staff and there's more more training. But what about those people who just come in? And I mean, is there nothing we can do about them being oriented to the position before they run? Isn't that a policy that could be developed? Since we do policy,
if you can ask the department to look into that. I mean, they do provide orientation. They do provide, just like the city clerk, for other people who run for elected office, information is provided, services are offered, but you cannot, in essence, force somebody to become educated about the process. It's there. I mean, I think that part of neighborhood councils, ask people who want to run to be engaged and participate in the neighborhood council system prior to running, and you learn hands-on. I mean, so there's multiple ways that's done. But, again, I'll work with the department and see, what can, be offered, more so. But, again, resources are made available to anyone who wants to run. It's how they choose to take advantage of them.
Okay, my turn. Commissioner Schaefer here. You talked about this funding process is with regards to more what some people refer to as more equitable funding among neighborhood councils. I know that although I left the room at the Valley Alliance because it might come up here. I did. It cleared out. Oh, yeah. What process do you think the department might use to come up with some equitable way of distributing funding, if you were going to consider that?
I think this is something I know that the plan review committees for the Board of Neighborhood Commissioners reviewed, what, 5 years ago, 4 years ago?
We voted them down.
Yeah. Well, the Valley didn't vote it down, but the rest of the city, ultimately the majority voted against it. And I think that they were looking at a different system. They were looking at having a standard amount that every neighborhood council would get for kind of operational, like a lower amount, and then based on population. And they were looking at residents, not stakeholders, because that's kind of a harder to track. That then they would be adjusted if they had a bigger population, they would get more money. So that it was left out of some decision makers. Judgment as to whether or not something was worthy of being granted. I think what, if we were to put together this, such an equity fund, I would want to go back out to the neighborhood councils and work with them to co-create some, you know, standards of review. I mean, it could be something that a committee of neighborhood council people come together and work on this with, and they review. I know Council Member Rue has that for his discretionary funds. He has, you know, a committee that looks at all the proposals. And I think that that might be a good way to go. It could be something the commission looks at. It could be, you know, there's multiple ways of doing this. But I do think neighbor council input would be key in crafting a policy.
Okay. I'll just be interested if you can, if in fact you're going to address that, I'd ask that you give us updates, because it's a very thorny issue and a difficult problem to solve. Okay. The next is training. Number one, I'm glad to see we've got more PCs.
Yay.
I hope that the PCs are being trained. In the past, unfortunately, we have had some that kind of made up their own. But I have seen a number of neighborhood councils that really have absolutely no idea what the Brown Act means. And what I really fear is that they're going to run into one of these traps one day when someone is going to catch them on that, and it's going to mess certain things up for them. I really think that training of neighborhood councils, especially of neighborhood council presidents, vice presidents, executive officers, and I don't know what we could do about it, but I think the department might be able to. But I think that there should be something where those particular persons, if they espouse to follow the Brown Act, and most of them claim to follow Robert's Rules, which most of them don't because they have no idea what Robert's Rules are, that they actually get training in, one, Brown Act, and two, how to run a meeting and what the rules are, because I've seen some very, very interesting and strange things when I've gone to neighborhood councils. And one of your PCs noticed my demeanor, and he got up and called the board on what they were doing, which was a total and complete violation of the Brown Act, which meant that they could have passed something to do with funding, and if somebody wanted to, 28 days later could have filed a Brown Act violation, and they'd have to do it all over again, and that would mess up whatever it was they were trying to fund. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I'm not saying somebody's going to, I'm just saying somebody could. So I would really like to see something, if the department can, to get those leaders in so that they learn what they're really supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm.
That's a great point, and I will say Vanessa can attest to the fact that we put the project coordinators, the new project coordinators, through 2 weeks of training. And I'll say this: it's not enough. And I told the project coordinators, you're getting 2 weeks of intensive training, and then consider a year learning curve. You know, yeah, because it's a lot, and. It's a lot for our volunteers, too, and we have to be, you know, we have to recognize that they are volunteers, and we're expecting a lot from them in terms of, you know, knowing the Brown Act and Robert's Rules and how to run meetings, and then the whole city processes that are out there and in which committees to follow and how city council works. And so we do offer different types of trainings for our neighbor council folks. And you know, my hope is that now that we have project coordinators or neighborhood empowerment advocates, as we call them, at neighbor councils, that they could be like coaches, so that if they forget something, that, you know, our neighbor council advocates would be there to say, oh, by the way, you know, if you want to make sure that you're doing this correctly, this is how you do it. Because even if you get trained, you still need to remember that training too. And so, you know, I hope that we will be able to work collaboratively in terms of helping neighbor councils function better in meeting operations, and for those neighbor councils that are already doing an amazing job with their meeting operations, that we can assist them with, like, you know, knocking on city hall doors that they need to, because now they're like doing more advanced work. So you know, we are definitely preparing for all types of education for our neighbor councils as well as for our staff.
Okay, what? We're on GM's report. We're on item 11 at the present moment. So this one. Speaking of listening to things, I believe at the very beginning of this meeting, I announced that if you wish to speak on an agenda item, please turn in your cards either at the beginning of the meeting or prior to the start of the agenda item. I know there are things that have come up that you may wish to comment on, but kind of messes up the planning. In any event, Glenn Bailey, strike that. Any other commissioner have anything more? Oh, my last comment is, by the way, yeah, I know the PCs are out there, and I know they're going to do a terrific job. I was just looking for a little proactive work than reactive work with regards to some of this training.
And I can't tell you how much we want to be proactive in everything that we do. I think in the last, you know, 6 years, we've been on the reactive side only because of staffing issues.
Yeah, I remember when the staff was. Okay, Glenn.
Glenn Bailey, I'll try to keep this to a minute. First of all, regarding the... So on the report of the general manager, I'd like to thank you for sending out the early notification to the lists for downtown LA Neighborhood Council and for Historic Cultural for the Skid Row. I think that's a good best practice. And I'd like to suggest that for the commission meeting, I know you have your own ENS list, but for the commission meeting on May 25th as announced, regarding the Arroyo Seco Herman matter, that the same ENS distribution be done to the Arroyo Seco list, even though it's, thank you. Number two, regarding the resolution on the timing of Neighborhood Council 2020 elections. So I don't know how that's being, so I first of all, I have a concern. We submitted ours, and there was no, like, immediate, even a auto reply. And I guess I'll need another minute. Given the time frame, I think that even with no auto reply, somebody should get back within 24 hours. I don't know, in the case of another neighborhood council that I personally am not submitting it, if in fact they voted on it, if they did submit it. So I think for transparency, maybe post it somewhere on the website. Here's the councils. Here's the ones that have replied. Maybe even how they, you know, what their position is. But right now, even for the one I personally submit for my neighborhood council, I have no idea if somebody got it. And that's a concern to me, frankly, especially when I hear there's only 12. I don't know if I'm part of that 12 or not. 66% of the neighborhood councils are not staggered. They have two-year terms, and so, you know, they're going to be the ones who are, the majority of whom are affected by a one-year deferral or the crazy alternative of having an election 2 years in a row. At least that's the feedback that I'm hearing. And then lastly, on the training, I'll leave it at the 2 minutes. Thanks.
Can I just quickly state what neighbor councils we've received just to answer?
Yeah, please.
Get ready. I'm going to say it really fast. Just kidding. So the ones that want to extend, Encino Neighbor Council, Bel Air Beverly Crest Neighbor Council, West Hills Neighbor Council, Northridge East Neighbor Council, Foothill Trails Neighbor Council, Greater Wilshire Neighbor Council, Hollywood United Neighbor Council, Woodland Hills Warner Center Neighbor Council, and Porter Ranch Neighbor Councils. The two that stated that they would not want to extend is Mid-City West Community Council and San Antonio Neighbor Council. And then we had one neighbor council that said not only do they not want to extend, they want to have elections in 2018, but they also want to have elections in 2019 as well, is Echo Park Neighbor Council.
I actually remember when we had them every year. At least we did. In any event, Wayne, you want to come up for a minute? You were the puppet. Okay. And the puppet. Okay. This is Mario, this is a 1 minute. Unless he wants two on this and he loses one.
You have four already.
No.
What?
He had his general comment.
What?
General public
I
comment
still have out. 10 minutes left.
No. No.
10 minutes. 5 for my friend and 5 for puppet. 10 minutes.
No. One or the other. Okay.
Yes.
Here we go.
All right. So my friend here filed a complaint against the Sherman Oaks Neighborhood Council President, Mr. Ziff, on your app. You rejected it. You know why? The department doesn't have jurisdiction over Brown Act violations. That's what the email said. So you're a liar. Then, of course, Skid Row Neighborhood Council tomorrow night. What time Puppet wants to go? I will give testimony in favor of General Jeff getting his challenge sustained, because I know Skid Row got screwed. I can prove it, because the reason I can prove it, I would have bussed 400 people in like they do over there in Nevada to get that Senator Democrat elected, but I didn't. Thank you.
Jason?
Yeah, just wanted to speak very briefly to a point that Commissioner Schaefer brought up about Robert's Rules of Order, and that a lot of people claim to use them but don't really know what they are. I know some neighborhood councils use Rosenberg's Rules of Order, which is basically Robert's Rules Light that refers back to Robert's Rules. So instead of condensing it, it expands it and makes it more problematic. I actually, in my efforts to find a less crazy Rules of Order, found the Democratic Rules of Order, and they're about 30 pages of 16-point font with about another 30 pages of commentary. And I think that with some tweaking for the Brown Act, these would actually be a much better set of rules of order for the neighborhood council system, if nothing else, because the amendment system is much easier. If you make the motion, you can accept amendments without a vote on whether or not to accept the amendments. So it's called mover's privilege, and I think that would speed things along quite, you know, substantially. It's kind of informally used by some neighborhood councils, but I think that, like, moving towards that system and away from Robert's Rules, which is meant for a body that meets daily, like Parliament, and was written hundreds of years before the Brown Act, makes a lot of sense. So please consider that Democratic Rules of Order. Thank you.
Corrine.
My comment is about, it pertains to trainings, the importance of trainings. I do agree that it would be so great to have a set standard training for officers on the board. Oftentimes, many times actually, when stakeholders visit a neighborhood council, what they could encounter is a board or a chair or a president who's not very familiar with how to run a meeting. And unfortunately, that is the one and the only impression that's long-lasting on stakeholders. And so when stakeholders visit and they happen to encounter a meeting that is a little rambunctious or out of control or not really in order, that's the only thing that they're left with. And they oftentimes they say, well, I really don't want to go to that meeting because they don't know what they're doing. And it just feels so disappointing. It's a shame that that's what we portray sometimes, but it's because of lack of training. And I understand that, you know, we don't want the department or the Board of Neighborhood Commissioners doesn't want to come down on neighborhood council and say, you have to do this, you have to do this. But at some point, we have to learn what we need to do. And it's not given to all of us to know what to do. Some of us are creative, go and look for how other people do it and emulate, and that seems to work. But there are instances, for instance, where you don't have a quorum, and you can, I know you can still go on forward with the meeting, like I saw Glenn Bailey when I attended one of his meetings last year. I was quite surprised to see how to conduct. Well, no. I'm very aware of it, that the Brown Act was very well observed, and that is not given to anybody to navigate through that very tight, fine line. So that takes, you know, training to know how to go between those lines. And I think that we need to know, we, the executive, we need to know this, what we need to know, so we can pass down the knowledge much better. In regards to elections, the department does have a nice video that we used last year before the elections, but we didn't really have time to do it. So everything is quick, and they come up, and we have to react. And I think the best analogy is like we're flying a plane while we're building it, and we never finish building the plane because, you know. So having trainings, having a set of standards, I think would be very, very beneficial for the future of the Neighborhood Council and make it accessible too.
Any further comment by the commissioners? By the general manager? We will now be moving on. We are moving on to number 13 on neighborhood, and it is discussion and possible action to approve Northridge East Neighborhood Council bylaw amendment application to increase the maximum age of the youth board seat from less than 18 to less than 21 years of age at the time the stakeholder is appointed. Are you going to be presenting?
Yes. Good evening, Commissioner Semi Park, Director of Neighbor Council Operations. We recommend and approve or request approval of Northridge East Neighbor Council's bylaw amendments. We feel that the increase in age of the youth seat will allow more opportunities for youth to participate, considering Northridge East, within their boundaries, has Cal State Northridge and only has one high school. So over the years, they have found some difficulty finding a high school student, yet CSUN students were not able to participate, although many of them are very, very active. So we do recommend approving this amendment, and if there's any questions, both Glenn and I would be able to answer.
There's something else here. That was the only thing they changed, wasn't it? Yeah.
For this meeting. Yes.
Any questions by any of the board members?
I also note that the request is to lower the voting age, correct, to 16? Okay. So is that... That's not before us. Okay.
Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah. We, from what I understand, that those are not items that we have agendized for today.
Yeah. The only thing we have on the agenda, well.
What? I do have a question, Commissioner Lipman. I noticed that... So you have the
this is about the youth board seat, and you mentioned that CSUN is in the neighborhood, but there is a CSUN student body board member. So I guess my question would be is what differentiates that?
Yeah, so from what I've observed, and Glenn, you can feel free to come up and elaborate. Yes, there is a CSUN member, but it is staff, and it is someone within the government affairs office, so it does represent the school or the university versus the youth seat, which can potentially be a CSUN student, would represent more of the youth and the voices of the CSUN student body.
Well, it sounds, I mean, at least what I'm reading, this is page 17, it says a registered student of CSUN at the time of the appointment, appointed by the ASCSU and president. So I guess, so it sounds like that would be appointed, that's appointed by the student president, and this would be appointed by the board.
I can see one other difference also. That would be a student that could be in excess of 21 years of age. Mm-hmm. Where the youth is anyone under 21 years.
Yeah.
And if you go to CSUN, you'll find a lot of students that mm-hmm. are over 21.
I just wanted to clarify that because, you know, there's definitely some overlap, but there's also a lot of variance in that as well, which I think is
Glenn, do you want to address some of the questions?
Understandable.
Glenn Bailey, you're here to represent. Yeah, you are, aren't you? You're the president.
So I get to use my title, Glenn Bailey, president of the Northridge East Neighborhood Council. So, yes, that's basically correct. The appointee by the student body president can be of any age, as long as they're a student. It can be a graduate student. And you basically have to be known to the student body president. It's kind of basically how I've observed it works. It generally is the person who is the legislative director within Associated Students, but not always, just because there's a symbiotic relationship between what they do with other levels of government and with the city of LA, which, you know, kind of makes it make sense to be on the neighborhood council, but there's no restriction specifically there. So as with many things in life, there was a compromise involved. Some of us were actually trying to get more of the Cal State Northridge student body eligible, but the majority decided to have the age be more restricted. So it would accommodate the younger, traditional younger university students. And also we have had high school students who were 18 for that period of time, maybe 6 months or whatever, and they were not eligible, even though they were a high school student, under the current rules, they were not eligible to be appointed at that time. So we're filling that opportunity. The folks that we have had, when they got to be 18 and the term was up, then, you know, they couldn't continue. One of them actually ended up becoming an at-large board member once he became 18 and served for several years. The last few, once they graduated high school, they went on. And we currently do have someone who is, he just turned 17 on the board. But the concern is that it took like a year to try to recruit somebody. And we did meet with the principal of the only high school within our boundaries and said, will you please help us try to find somebody, you know, in your school? And of course, that's not the only people who are eligible, because you could have high school students living anywhere within the boundaries that go to other high schools, but it's more difficult to know what high school they go to and make that direct connection. Did I answer the question you were?
Yeah.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments by the commission? Okay. Wayne, who's going to do this one? Okay. Unless he wants more, but he'll run out of time. 1 minute on this one?
How many minutes left?
I think you've got 2 minutes left.
No, three.
Wait, let me see. Hang on. I'll tell
Criminal.
You got that.
Take it easy.
I'll have to go back and count for sure. I know you've got three more.
Yeah.
And I got to check and see the public comment didn't count. So
that's right.
I'll let you know.
Okay. So go ahead, because he ran for a board seat on the Echo Park Neighborhood Council.
You want 1 minute on this one?
Yeah, that gives me two left, right?
I believe so, but I'll make sure.
Okay, go ahead. So he went ahead and ran, so he doesn't like age restrictions. Go ahead.
Yes, there was an open seat on the Echo Park Neighborhood Council on EE, and I ran. But I could not serve because I was not at least 16 years old, because I was made in China, and I'm only about 4 years old. So get rid of the age restrictions. Allow puppets to run. Allow me to run. I want to be a puppet like Herb Wesson. Allow puppets to run for neighborhood council seats. I think it's time we be represented. You Kermit the Frog, Miss Piggy, all of them get paid. They get TV shows. How come puppets can't serve? I think it's time. Herb Wesson's a puppet. I'm a puppet. And you're puppets. So let's no more age restrictions. No more. Thank you very much.
All right. No other comments. I'll invite a motion with regards to number 13.
I make a motion. Oh.
Okay. Go for it.
I move that we approve. What number are we on?
13.
I make a motion that we approve the Northeast Neighborhood Council bylaw amendment application to increase the maximum age of the youth board member seat from less than 18 to less than 21 years of age at the time the stakeholder is appointed.
We have a second.
I'll second.
Motion on the floor by Commissioner Atkinson, seconded by Commissioner Lippman, with regards to moving agenda item 13. No further discussion. Those in favor, please so indicate.
What? I mean, I would just, do you mind?
You want further discussion?
Yeah, I mean, I it sounds like we're all in support, but I do think that this is a smart compromise. They lowered the age, and they've increased the number of people who can be involved, so I think it's
okay,
a good move. So.
Okay, now I'll ask for
okay.
Those in favor, please so signify.
Aye.
Any opposed? None opposed, matter passes unanimously. Moving on to number 14.
Where are we?
We're on number 14. Discussion and possible action, report from the Ad Hoc Committee on Neighborhood Council Elections, Council File 15-1022-S2, regarding the recommendations of the Department of Neighborhood Empowerment. Mr. Lippman, you were the chair of that.
Thank you very much. This ad hoc committee was created about a month ago. Myself, Commissioner Maggie Derek Kuros, and Commissioner Wiebe, and we met to discuss the recommendations of the department and the council file. And there's a lot in the recommendations. So we still have some additional items that we wanted to discuss, but we wanted to get clarification from the department regarding some of the recommendations. But we wanted to propose some sense to, or we wanted to put something out basically for neighborhood councils and the commission to discuss. And these aren't meant to be passed today. These are meant for discussion points and sort of put something out there to see how people feel about it, but we wanted to start focusing, and obviously we'll discuss them agendize it for the next meeting, but we wanted to recommend a position on youth participation in neighborhood councils, which was one of the recommendations, and take a position on that. And I think what we tried to do was, well, one of the things we did was we read through all of the community impact statements submitted by neighborhood councils, and we sort of summarized, I had sort of a matrix of how different neighborhood councils came on, and there was almost, I think, about 15 or 16 that neighborhood councils that weighed in. And so we took a look at those and looked at some of the ideas that came from those community impact statements
and ultimately use some of the ideas and some of the language that came from the neighborhood councils in some of the recommendations. And so we wanted to discuss two items. One would be a policy change, so that's the youth participation in neighborhood councils, and the second would be a letter that we would pass on and write on behalf of the commission to city council regarding the council file and regarding in particular the budget recommendations. So if you'll allow me a little bit of time, I can kind of summarize each one. Is that okay?
Why don't we look first towards the online voting and such?
Sure. So the letter basically kind of reviews the Board of Neighborhood Commissioners' involvement in online voting and the history with it. And it recommends or supports the recommendation number 5 made by the department to instruct the Office of the City Administrative Officer to identify $342,000 in funding for election outreach and expansion of the online voting platform this current fiscal year to begin as soon as possible. But it also instructs, it also asks that City Council instruct the department to do a couple of things that we found were pretty critical issues that came up with neighborhood councils. One was to maintain the independence of neighborhood councils by allowing them the choice on whether to include online voting as an option in their election selection. And that was something that clearly came across in the feelings of many neighborhood councils. Number 2 is to identify a process where the upload of identification is not required, as this was a major barrier to registration and concerns over data security were apparent. And number 3, to ensure voters are provided immediate confirmation of the registration, even if provisional. Number 4, to allow voting to begin immediately upon registration confirmation, even if the ballot is provisional. And number 5, to improve the pop-up polling process by enforcing electioneering rules at pop-up polls, explicitly preventing a candidate from requesting pop-up poll locations, or require the full board of the IEA, the Independent Election Administrator, to approve the location, and have aggressive public notice and outreach programs to all candidates. And these recommendations really were to address some of the concerns that neighborhood councils brought up and that are sort of summarized in the previous paragraph. The second part of the letter relates to the recommendation by the department that neighborhood councils set aside 20% of their budget for election outreach activity. And we as the ad hoc committee decided not to support that recommendation. We felt it could have the potential, and many neighborhood councils pointed this out, to cause useless waste and abuse of neighborhood council funds, and that neighborhood councils should ultimately have a say on how they decide to spend their limited resources. We did recommend that the department should establish some sort of minimum requirements for a neighborhood council to carry out a successful election, and basically establish specific budget categories to track those spending categories for the election and to hold neighborhood councils accountable. And so we felt that this would improve the neighborhood council elections rather than saying, you know, you have to spend 20% and that's the requirement. So that's sort of the goal of the letter. And again, this is not, we sort of came to the conclusion that these things have been kind of taken from the Board of Neighborhood Commissioners' purview because of this council file and is in City Council's hands. And so we wanted to write this as a letter to them to sort of state our position and the sense of the commission looking at what responses we got from neighborhood councils. So this was not meant to, you know, say this is what should be done, but just really recommendations to City Council based on what we've heard from neighborhood councils.
Comment by commissioners. Okay, I will. having spoken to others, I do like very much the idea of recommending that the department put together two things. One, tasks that they think are necessary for a successful election, and two, the budget category, because right now there is no budget category for elections per se. And that, I think, would be a very good recommendation, because it would allow, first of all, neighborhood councils themselves to track, and number two, for the department to be able to track elections and election spending, and to get a better idea of what neighborhood councils are doing, and get a better idea of what's successful, what's unsuccessful, and to be able to have a good best practices. I think that's a very good thing that we could recommend, especially to the department. And with regards to the online voting, I can't say I disagree with the recommendations, and obviously all we can do is make recommendations, and the only question would be whether to address these recommendations to the city council or to address these recommendations as recommendations to the department itself with a CC to the city council. Because I think that what you've done is you've put some things together, and I think the department might well appreciate getting some of that knowledge, especially what you've done as far as the tracking. So just my comments. If no one else, there is a public comment card. Commissioner Liu.
General Manager Liu.
General Manager Liu, yes, I knew that.
I just wanted to thank the commissioners for putting together this letter and for doing the consideration of our proposal. I think that some of these recommendations are really excellent, and we're happy to try to incorporate them. The one thing that I will note, that if online voting is approved by City Council, I do have an issue with it being an optional item for neighbor councils, only because it is a way to include more people in the process. And when I have heard neighborhood councils state that they do not want it, it's usually connected with, you know, trying to exclude a certain type of voter within their communities. So I would, you know, encourage that if it were to go forward with City Council, that it's just available as a platform for every neighborhood council, and that they will have it regardless of whether or not they make a actual decision to have it. It's just going to be there for their stakeholders to not only register online, but also to vote online. And I think that that would be the most fitting for the, in terms of the spirit of the neighborhood council system of inclusivity.
Do you mind if I address that briefly?
Commissioner Lippman.
I mean, on a personal level, as an individual commissioner, I would agree with you, but I think in discussions with the commissioners, at least from the ad hoc committee and from previous discussions we've had, plus a lot of the feedback from the neighborhood councils, I don't think we're there yet. And I wanted to create a compromise document that said, let's try to move this forward and let's continue to support it, because there's obviously some who want to end it completely, but also recognize that some neighborhood councils just aren't there yet. And so that was my way of kind of compromising, I think. So, but I hear your, I understand what you're saying.
Commissioner Atkinson.
So I have a question, Eli or Gracie or both. So if we get online voting, we're going to have online voting, but a neighborhood council will still have the opportunity to go, a neighborhood council member would still have the opportunity to go vote in person.
Yes, that's correct. They'll have the opportunity to still cast a paper ballot if they want to, because even at the online voting on the day of elections, when they came in, they had the option to either vote online or cast a paper ballot instead.
So, Eli, so what's the issue if they don't have, if they can go and vote regular like they've always done for years with a paper ballot? Why not allow online voting, especially for the newer, younger members who probably would want to vote online rather than some of the longtime members of a neighborhood council? Why not be able to have both?
I mean, if the sense from the commission is, you know, let's have all neighborhood councils participate in it, then I'm happy to go in that direction. I just know from a lot of feedback from neighborhood councils, there's many neighborhood councils who would very much balk at the department saying, well, you know, you have to have an online voting component. It's required. They can do with it what they will, I guess, but, you know, we would get a lot of hate mail. It might be which is fine. I'll take it. But I don't know. I mean, that's a lot of the a majority of the feedback was, you know, many neighborhood councils were, some said yes, we want it. Please bring it to our neighborhood. Some said we like the idea, but we're not 100% comfortable with it. And the, you know, a majority, and I could look at the numbers. Well, majority were kind of in that position of like, yeah, we're comfortable with it, but we're not ready yet. And then there was, you know, a group that said, absolutely no way, never again, don't do online voting. So it kind of was all over the place, and I was looking for a compromise that, you know, that would also, one of my considerations as well was city council. I mean, there are people in city council who are vehemently against this. And there are those who are very supportive, like Councilman Bob Blumenfeld for this neighborhood came up after it came up and was really supportive. And there's a couple of other council members. So I was trying to, but we can push. I'm happy to change the language if there's a feeling that we should just say we're going to continue to push forward with the online voting system, and this is what we recommend to city council.
Well, I think we're going to be discussing this at our next meeting also. However, okay. a couple of quick things. Did you wish to make a comment, Commissioner Webby, before I do?
Commissioner Webby, I think everything that Commissioner Levin has mentioned is actually everything that we considered as an ad hoc committee, and he's expressed it quite clearly. It isn't in. There was nothing in opposition to making that statement about online voting. It was simply trying to take into account all of the feedback and all of the information that we had gained to this point, bringing the information back to the commission. And as he's already mentioned, I know that I would be happy to support online. I understand that any bumps in the road that were mentioned to us are things that genuinely happen whenever anything new is tested. And I think with the provisions that are going to be put into place and the lessons learned with the first round of online voting, that things will become better with each progressive year. And so with that, you know, we certainly could support online voting as something to look forward to as a regular option that all neighborhood councils would need to include. That's all.
I need some clarification, Commissioner Schaefer, from Commissioner Lippman. Your point here, your bullet point, identify a process where upload of identification is not required. If someone who comes to vote in person has to have a source of identification, why should that be any different than someone who wishes to vote online? I know there was a, perhaps Commissioner Liu, you could help me, the so-called data breach that we had, was that candidates or were the actual registered voters?
So the information is a combination, because we had in Studio City, we had a request for the about 200 or so registered voters at that point that we had. And I do want to remind folks that this was on the quick base. It wasn't the everyone counts voter registration. This was on the quick base. And so There was not, apparently, there was an accusation that that no outreach was being done by the neighborhood council. So the candidates wanted access to the registered voters so that they could actually provide information about the election and their candidacy. So the 27 candidates were given a list of the registered voters with emails, and unfortunately, it was an internal document that had links back to their voter registration file, which had some of their like documentation. So that was emailed to the 27 candidates. It was open for approximately 11 hours, and then when we found out about it, and then it was immediately closed, and then those voters were offered credit monitoring if they wish to take that up, and some of them did, and we've not heard of anything happening from some of that information. I think we're going to be providing an update to the online voting with what happened with subdivision for Skid Row Neighborhood Council, and I think that was very eye-opening in terms of, you know, having approximately 1,600 folks vote in that election and about 1,400 of it being online. And you know, I think that ended up being, from what I understand, higher than the congressional race that was in that same area. And I really attribute that to the fact that we had online voting, we had these pop-up polls. What we found was that people were fine uploading actually their photo ID, that's that main identifier. But what folks did have issues with, or just kind of messed it up because it's so different from just regular municipal voting, was the secondary stakeholder identification piece. So if you're a homeowner, you know, it was like the property tax or bill or whatever else that you had to prove that, or if you're a business person, and I hear homeless. If the folks that were homeless, they had to vote in person, because if they had no documents, then we had to basically self-affirm them in person. So they still had the opportunity to vote in person.
Okay, thank you. So Commissioner Lippman, when you say identifier process where upload of identification is not necessary, are you saying certain personal information, or are you saying actual identification? Here's who I am and how I prove who I am.
I mean, the personal information is fine. I think it's either, you know, my goal with that bullet point, or our goal as the ad hoc committee with that bullet point, was to recognize that people's data is personal, and we want to keep it that way. So if it's a matter of, you know, they have to show up at a pop-up location or in person at the poll with that secondary form of identification to verify, or, you know, if it is uploaded, that once verified, it's immediately scrubbed from the system, or, you know, in some way shredded online or something to protect it, so that, you know, that it's not in the system anymore. I mean, that should, once verified, it should no longer be in the system. I think is the concern of the ad hoc committee is okay, to really protect people's identity.
I think one of the questions then that we could direct to staff is if they could inquire of Everyone Counts, and I believe in my conversations they said they could, that they could actually take identification themselves as to who a person was, issue whatever ID number they need, and then that information is kept totally separate from the voting. I believe they said they could do that.
Yes, that's actually the reason why had the the online Everyone Counts voter registration been available, that breach would not have happened. Okay. Because they would have been kept in two different files. The other thing that was, you know, a fail on our department side was the fact that the voters who were already confirmed as saying we had everything, their documentation should have been immediately deleted. And there was a delay of a few days of that happening, which is exactly when this internal document was sent out. And again, had that happened, then the information would not have been available for folks to see. But again, that's the QuickBase thing, and everyone counts. That system has already been built out. We used it successfully in Skid Row Neighborhood Council, and the information is completely separated.
Okay. And Commissioner Schaefer again. I will comment that there's a number of neighborhood councils that voted against online voting, mine being one of them, over my objection. And a lot of it has to do with a lack of trust, and somehow we have to educate them. I know I was educated by talking directly to the security personnel at Everyone Counts, and have some explanation. Perhaps there's some way to get them to put out a very brief summary of how they work their security, how they track IP addresses, how they determine whether something is coming from out of the country, what they do with them, how they segregate them out and allow them to continue to come in, and then eventually just delete them all when they verify that they're out of country IPs, and how they verify that a large number of IPs from, or a large number of votes from a single IP could be a nursing home or something like that. I think it would be very good to have them come out and explain that, and perhaps as part of their agreement, they could do that, hold that kind of thing. I'm just putting that out there.
Yes, and Everyone Counts is willing to do that. They've actually offered.
Okay, very good, yeah.
I think it would be an excellent panel at the Congress of Neighborhoods to discuss online voting.
Oh, Glenn Bailey, there's an idea. I know I carried on about an hour conversation with their vice president in charge of security before I decided I could vote for the contract. So, okay. Very good. I like it. Thank you very much. Thank you for the committee. We will put it back on. It's out there. I'm going to ask if there's some way the department could get this first document out so that neighborhood councils can see it. We've got a meeting coming up on the 15th. I know it's downtown. It'd be nice to get comments come in or emails or anything else.
Yeah, we'll send it out in our newsletter on Friday.
Okay, thank you. And your second half of this had to do. You want to do that before we get to the second half? Okay. So you don't want to comment on the other part. But you don't have to, because you just, you know, your bylaws are different. Never mind. Glenn Bailey.
Okay, Glenn Bailey. So just a reminder that I was a supporter of online voting. The two neighborhood councils I'm involved with did support and did use online voting. However, I thought when this commission voted for $553,000 contract, plus however much else it costs, that we would be getting something that we could count on in many regards. And you've heard some issues, and this is not about Studio City, but in my registration, when even though I was promised I would get the code, 5 days later I didn't have a code. And another example is for a shared area, the Sepulveda Basin, they recognized one neighborhood council but not the other. They said I wasn't eligible because it wasn't recognizing the shared area. So there were glitches. And just based on my experience, the fact that the Valley had no pop-up polls except for Porter Ranch because they came in late in June, the Valley got screwed. And I'm not saying maybe that was good because of the controversy of pop-up polls, but
you want to extend it another minute?
Yeah.
Okay.
It'll probably take the rest of my 3 minutes. Sorry, now I lost my train of thought.
Had to do with the pop-up
polls.
Yeah,
okay, but there was a bigger thought here. So anyway, it's very disruptive when I have to deal with. Okay, so reminder, in-person voting, Venice Neighborhood Council had the highest in the city, no online voting. Sunland Tahunga, 1,223 voters, very high, second highest I think it was. So I realize the potential for online voting. I think that the recent Skid Row kind of shows once it, you know, what the potential is there. But we had huge problems. I don't think it's ready for prime time in 2018 until we have 100% assurance that these glitches are taken care of. The one thing I want to leave you with, and this is actually a vote of my neighborhood council, and if it's not in the council file, I need to make sure it is, that we voted in conjunction with this council file that we are, I'm not sure what the word is, but that we want all of the voter registration data imported in so that you don't have to, if you're a resident and you're registered to vote within the boundaries, you are eligible going forward. We were promised that. It was stated that way, but it didn't happen. So if you need another year to do it, that's another good reason to postpone the elections to get it done. It's not everybody who's eligible to vote for neighborhood councils, but it's a heck of a lot of people. It's millions of people in the city of Los Angeles who will already be pre-qualified as a resident. Now, there may be other qualifications that they have to show depending on the seat of the board, but it's a good start. The comment regarding spending the $20,000, a neighborhood council, two neighborhood councils from here, did two saturation mailers. The joining neighborhood council did none, and they said, is that it? Okay. But the voter turnout was lower for the one that did the two saturation mailers, and they spent over $10,000.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I just clarify that we actually did import the registered voters for municipal elections into the online voting, but you have to remember that not all of the registered voters had email addresses, so that's one issue. The other issue is that not all of the seats allowed us to just plop them in and allow them to vote. Somar, we could do that because they were all at large, so if they're a resident and they were fine to vote, but some seats distinguish between, so they distinguish, so we weren't able to automatically plop them in, so we actually had to email them and say, if you're interested, then you should, the ones that had email addresses, then you should please let us know, register further. But, you know, you have to remember that online voting is just a tool in terms of, you know, getting folks to participate. And if you don't do proper outreach, and I think, you know, we tried to email them multiple times, but some of them reported us as spam, so it locked us out of the whole system in terms of the Nation Builder database. And we have to just kind of go about it doing it the right way and just dropping a whole database, and it was not the right way. And we learned that lesson, unfortunately, in a bad way.
Wayne.
So as it's been shown, here's what the report says. Specifically, the voter registration process was onerous and created a stumbling block for voters. Security of voter data was compromised, and the integrity of neighborhood council elections were called into question based on online voting concerns. And yet, you decided to use online voting for the neighborhood council election for Skid Row's determination. And what happened, we just showed, if somebody was homeless, they were not able to vote online. They could only vote with a paper ballot. Separate but equal. So LA operates under Plessy versus Ferguson. So you're black and you're homeless, you live in one America. You're white, and you know Rocky Delgadillo and the northern property owners, they get everybody to vote online, and they defeat the election of Skid Row. I'm going to use 2 minutes on this. The Skid Row election is the most disgusting, racist, homophobic, anti-establishment, rotten, fraudulent election I've ever seen, because I know Rocky Delgadillo came in there and slimed his way in front of Herb Wesson and his committee to disenfranchise the poorest people of our city. And General Jeff, He's terrific. He did everything right, and you screwed him out of his neighborhood council. Over 2 years he worked on it. You robbed him, and you're going to have some puppet panel tomorrow at the Deaton Center to do what? You screwed him, and you just showed you screwed him because homeless people could not vote in an equal, fair, due process way. You just showed that. So automatically, we have to rehold that election and only do it by paper ballots. Because I want to see Rocky Delgadillo, the criminal, do it by paper ballot. Because I'll count every one of those election ballots, and I will prove he's shipping those people in. Skid Row voted 85% of the paper ballots in favor of getting their own neighborhood council. And I'm going to see to it happens, because you disenfranchise these people. You allowed Rocky Delgadillo to be hired to bribe the council. Okay. And Herb Wesson's being sued exactly by me for the same reason. His name is not Herb Wesson. His name is Herman Jason Wesson. He has never ran for office with his legal name.
Thank you.
He's ineligible to serve on the council because he ran under a fraudulent name.
Do me a favor.
And don't let him continue to sit on that council with his fake name. He's a piece of crap, and Skid Row deserves their own neighborhood council. You robbed those people. You should be ashamed of yourselves.
Okay, we've got it. Thank you.
And you should immediately resign. Disgusting. You really are.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, Special Adkins in there. I'm holding my head because you screwed these people.
Wayne.
You screwed them.
Okay.
Just want to, again, provide a clarification. Homeless people could vote online if they had the documentation to vote online.
Okay. Mr. Lippman.
Yep. No, I'm not changing it now.
You had a second part to this.
Yeah, I know we don't have a lot of time to discuss, and I think we need to continue to have conversations with the city attorney. But you know, I looked at all the neighborhood councils, which ones had what the minimum voting ages were across the neighborhood council system, who had youth participation seats, and I was really surprised to see that over almost 2/3 of all neighborhood councils allow for minimum voting age between 13 had a minimum voting age less than 16, 41 had a minimum voting age between 16 and 18, and 40 of them had some sort of youth board seat appointed advisory. And then, you know, I looked at some of the research out there that's been done indicating that, you know, if you start to vote young, it becomes habitual and can create lifelong voters, and that there's sort of this trickle-up effect where student-initiated discussions at home can lead to increased parental civic engagement and voter turnout. And then just generally that, there was sort of a sense from the ad hoc committee and some of the research that we did that, you know, it's unfair that, you know, depending on what side of the street you live on, if you're 17 years of age, if you live on one side of the street, you can vote in the neighborhood council election. And if you live on the other side of the street, you can't. And so we wanted to kind of create some consistency across the neighborhood council system, whereby every neighborhood council would have at least a minimum level of participation of youth at 16 years of age, but that neighborhood councils were free to set it lower. So those neighborhood councils who had it as low as 13, they could leave it at that. But all neighborhood council elections would allow 16-year-olds to vote in. And then we wanted to make some recommendations on how neighborhood councils, based on what other neighborhoods have done, like we just saw with North Hollywood Northeast.
Northridge.
Sorry, it's late. Northridge East. I'm sorry. I don't know where my...
You're not a Valley person.
Yeah, sorry. No, I used to be, so I should know this. I'm sorry. I'm too many NH... Okay. my apologies. Northridge. East, you know, the different opportunities for youth engagement on the board and the way that different neighborhood councils do it differently. And it wasn't to say, you know, you have to do it this way. It has to be, you know, this or the other, but here are the options. And these are the options you should strongly consider as part of your board structure to engage, youth. And I think just as there was the proposal to, you know, increase the age, and I think some neighborhood councils have, you know, youth seats being from 16 to 21 or even, I think, to 23 or 24. It gives some leeway to kind of give that opportunity to participate and on the board. So that is sort of the straw man that I wanted to put out there to get feedback from stakeholders, to get feedback from commissioners, and you know, I think we'll continue this discussion at subsequent meetings. So
okay, and
or not me, I'm sorry, let me amend that the ad hoc committee, because we came to a consensus on it, so it wasn't me. The ad hoc committee came to a consensus on in terms of a policy to put out there for discussion.
Okay, very good, thank you. Good ideas all. Moving forward. Newsletter. Anything you'd like to throw out with regards to the newsletter, or who might be our featured commissioner?
It's still in development, so I'll have a draft at the next meeting.
Thank
so.
You. Okay. Commission business. Comments by commissioners on subject matters within the board's jurisdiction. Comment on commissioners' own activities. Brief announcements. Anybody? Commissioner Lippman.
I attended the Mayor's Civic University on homelessness and affordable housing. There's a great crowd there. There was the policy folks on housing for the mayor there. There was somebody from United Way who spoke about their effort, and Triple H, Measure H, and the funding sources that are coming down. And, you know, I think there was a real sense from the neighborhood council leaders who were there, and these were appointed liaisons, that they really want to see something done, and rather than just being sort of told what's going to happen, they really want to be engaged partners in this, and they want decisions to start at the grassroots level rather than sort of city planning or the mayor or city council saying, well, you know, we're gonna build 50 units of permanent supported housing here, and that's the decision we've made. There was a real expression of angst against that happening, and a real expression of be our partners. Like, we're here, and we know our neighborhoods, and we know what is needed, and the challenges, and if you come to us and have an open discussion and conversation through these homelessness liaisons, the conversation around not citing something in a particular area or a particular neighborhood will be less of a will be mitigated, because the neighborhood will feel as if it was a partner rather than an adversary, which is, I think, where many people felt the planning department and others in City Hall saw things. So I thought it was a healthy conversation, and the question is, what is sort of the follow-up? And I'm really excited to see that there was half a dozen members of the mayor's staff and the department staff at the meeting for that. So I'm hoping to see some action. For those who are here and still listening, the recommendation...
This is recorded.
Oh, that who will listen to this very long meeting afterwards, the one recommendation that I made that I think a lot of people supported was, neighborhoods know where underutilized, vacant, and deteriorating buildings are in their neighborhood. And if they are to come up with a list and present that to their city council members and say, these are the opportunities and the places where we can cite these, then it's a healthier conversation. And then they also know what developments are 6 months to 2 years in the pipeline, because pre-development takes 2 to 3 years in the city. And so if they know who is looking to develop and they approach them and say, you know, if you're building more than 25 units and you make 50% of them affordable housing, you could be eligible for this Triple H money. And so instead of just building luxury apartments, they might, and then using the density bonus, which we all hate because they can circumvent our system, and building, and then you lose, and you know, they demolish an 8-unit building with below market rate housing, and then they build only 6 affordable housing units, which is a very technical definition. You lose
market rate housing. But by proposing to them that they leverage Triple H in the community with these developments, we may actually be able to start a conversation with developers that where they can leverage that money and be able to produce more affordable and below market rate and market rate housing instead of luxury condos, and have it pencil out so that everybody wins, the community wins, the developer, you know, I hate to say win, and the city as a whole wins. So there is that path, but I think it's going to be a very difficult path. Anyways, that was the conversation that I was had. It was a very good conversation.
Very good. I wonder if there's any conversation about one of my favorite subjects, but we won't get into that right now. other commissioners? None? Okay. I'm just going to mention that it was mentioned here, green space and things like that, and Tarzana Neighborhood Council is going to be partnering with Council District 3, with the city and other respects, etc., and we're going to be on the 13th of this month planting a whole lot of trees along the boulevard. So very interesting. DWP will donate some of the trees. They'll even plant them. However, the specification is that they must be on the north side of the boulevard, and they must be south of the businesses on the north side of the boulevard, but no further than X number of feet. It all has to do with shade and conservation of energy. So it's but they're gonna put in their own. So, all right. Anything more? Nothing more. I will actually entertain a motion.
Commissioner?
I forgot. I'm sorry. Thank you for reminding me. Comments by commissioners. Very quick. It was mentioned about Brown Act, et cetera. General manager gave out three separate dates that the city attorney is giving live ethics training. And I am informed that at that live ethics training, there is discussion of the Brown Act and other things. So be a very good place to find out what's going on and pass that back to your neighborhood councils. Okay? Thank you for reminding me. Now I'll entertain a motion. Nobody wants to leave?
I move to adjourn.
Second. Any objection to us adjourning? No objection. Meeting is adjourned. Thank you. We'd like to get streaming audio.